This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest. This is Sharmila Ganesan together with Lim Soo Ann and T. Xiao Eek. And now on to our second story.
Yes, so every festive season, we are urged to think about the plight of children in orphanages and in shelter homes. And, you know, to be fair, many of you, I'm sure, do your best to help these children. Perhaps you try to donate some toys or gifts and books, or you perhaps even make visits to these homes. And while you probably mean well, it's worth noting that, you know, actually within the ethos of child rights work, we actually should not accept orphanages as the long-term solution for children who are in need of shelter and care, because no residential institution, no matter how well-meaning, can replace the family environment that is so essential to every child.
And for a long time, this has been a central tenet for those working in the area of children's rights. But it was only recently that world governments actually made a commitment to end orphanages. So this was on 18 December, in 2019, that's last year, where the UN General Assembly in New York adopted a resolution on the rights of the child, and that saw all 193 UN member states stating their commitment to end the unnecessary separation of children from their parents. And so this is a major milestone in fulfilling every child's right to family.
There are actually many misconceptions about the role of orphanages and the circumstances under which children are put into them. You know, some children are placed in institutions because their primary caregivers, and in most cases their parents, have died, or their parents have relinquished or abandoned them, or they've had their responsibility from them withdrawn. But in many cases, most children are actually there for other reasons, you know, such as the need for special care, or the temporary inability of parents to cope with having with caring for them, or instances of domestic violence or neglect, or loss of contact with parents and family in, let's say, armed conflict or other emergency situations.
Yeah.
And so by adopting the resolutions, governments have agreed for the first time in history that orphanages actually harm children. So they recognise that the vast majority of children in orphanages have living family, and therefore all children should be united, reunited with or supported to remain with their own families. And so where that's not possible, the resolution says that governments should commit to provide high quality family and community-based alternative care for children.
Yeah, so the resolution, which came on the 10th anniversary of the Guidelines for the Alternative Care of Children, and also on the 30th anniversary of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child last year, also contained a number of other groundbreaking commitments. One was that for the first time ever, the General Assembly recognised that volunteering in orphanages, including short visits by tourists, can encourage the existence of institutional care and also lead to children being actively recruited to orphanages. And so the resolution calls on states to combat the trafficking and exploitation of children in care facilities, and for governments to take appropriate measures to prevent and address the harms related to what they call, or what's actually now accepted as a term, orphanage volunteering and tourism.
And the resolution also contained another commitment, which is to address the dire gap when it comes to existing data on the number of children living in orphanages. So what we know is that there are an estimated 8 million children in orphanages worldwide, but this does not reflect the actual situation. And so the UN General Assembly has called on governments to improve their data collection, information management and reporting systems. And finally, the resolution also reaffirms the state's responsibility to protect children from all forms of violence and abuse in all care settings.
Okay. So to get a better idea of the situation faced by children in these institutional care settings, and the dangers that they face, I spoke to two people from UNICEF Malaysia earlier today, Sarah Norton-Stahl, Chief of Child Protection, as well as Lee Lin Nee, Child Protection Specialist. So first I asked Sarah to explain how orphanages and residential institutions are harmful to children.
I think this is an important issue to understand, that children who don't benefit from parental or family care are really at a severe disadvantage. Much research and studies have shown that children who live in institutions or residential care, they suffer long-term psychological, emotional effects. They don't really develop as well as children who have the benefit of family or parental care. and that we understand that children really cannot live to their full potential and really experience the best they can in life if they live in residential or institutional care. They also suffer greater risk of exploitation or abuse or violence if they're in residential or institutional care.
Linnie, it was really interesting to find out that, well, looking at global statistics, over 80% of children in orphanages are not actually orphans. They do have a living parent. So what is the situation like here in Malaysia? And what are the circumstances in which these children, not being orphans, would be placed in orphanages?
So in Malaysia, at the moment, there is no overall statistics because we also recognise that there is a whole range of different types of orphanages, both registered with the government, government homes, as well as non-government homes. And so this is something that UNICEF is working to support the government and civil society with, which is to map out precisely the types of institutions out there and the numbers of children and also the types of families that are going to come from. However, we did support a study a couple of years ago which looked into one state, and from the findings of that study, it did show that a high percentage of children do have at least one or two parents still surviving. And in terms of institutions, there are different types of institutions in the government as well as in non-government sector. So amongst orphanages, there are those for orphans, neglected or destitute children. And even amongst the orphanages, there are children in there who do have parents. And in other institutions, children may be placed there for reasons of being physically, sexually, psychologically abused. And they be placed under care and protection orders.
What about situations where the families are unable to care for the children because of certain special needs or financial reasons? Is that very prevalent here in Malaysia?
Yes. So the study that was conducted by Orphan Care and Lumos that we supported together with YF and Hasana did find that a majority of children who do have parents have been placed there because oftentimes the parents are too poor to take care of children or they are unable to cope with the stress of taking care of a child, perhaps because they're a single parent. And so, yes, there are a variety of reasons for why children are placed in homes beyond the most regular reasons of abuse and being abandoned.
Okay. Sarah, if we're talking about ensuring that children are kept together with their families and are not separated from them, what kind of support do families need then to be able to overcome those issues that Linnie has just mentioned?
Well, ideally, there should be an effective social protection scheme in place in countries to ensure that parents are not giving up children to institutions due to economic hardships or poverty. Mm-hmm. So it is ultimately schemes that provide child grants or other types of cash assistance to low-income families. That has been shown by research that that does improve the opportunity for families to be able to take care of their children and to send them to school, because one of the big concerns is simply being able to educate your child or being able to provide basic needs for your child. And tragically, some families do feel simply so impoverished that they assume wrongly that their child would be better off in an institution just because of economic hardship. But again, it's really important for governments to have in place an effective social service scheme or a social protection scheme that allows for all families that have the capacity to take care of their children properly. Indeed, it's a different situation if the court has determined that there is violence or abuse in the house and that the child cannot live in that family situation due to the dysfunctional family. But in that case, the alternative would be foster care, for example, so that the child can still be in a family, even if it's not their genetically determined parents, but if a foster family can provide support, that's another better alternative.
Okay. And presumably fostering is one of the alternative care options that governments need to look into providing?
Yes, foster care is recognized as a very positive alternative. When the child's actual family, for many reasons, is simply unable to take care of them, again, because of a possible situation where maybe the parents are dead or they're very ill or they suffer from issues like drug abuse, etc., then fine. Foster care is a recognized, very acceptable and positive alternative.
Just in addition to foster care, there are also other types, for example, adoption as one of the measures of last resort where the parents are simply not around anymore or other reasons, and also kinship care where you can get placed with extended family as well. Other options, and this is also another area, is there are also children in immigration detention centers. And so one of the things that the UN resolution, the recent UN resolution also calls for is alternatives to detention, where children who are in detention centers simply because of their migratory status or their parents' migratory status has been placed there should instead be placed in community based settings. And that is something that the government is also looking into.
So, I mean, a UN resolution, while is a huge step in terms of governmental commitment and international commitment, you know, it feels very far removed from children who are, you know, in these homes now. What difference will this resolution make? What kind of, what should we be seeing moving forward to actually make a difference to these children?
Okay, I think that it is a huge, important step that we have this resolution, and it was really welcomed when we read about this in Malaysia. I mean, Malaysia is a signatory to the Convention on the Rights of the Child. So this resolution, again, it sort of binds countries who are signatories to adhere as much as possible to the resolution. And I believe that it offers important guidance. It sort of brings advocacy to the issue. It raises awareness. And in Malaysia, I think it's very timely because the Ministry of Women has recently agreed that Malaysia will be involved in some research. It's going to be a survey research on the situation of children in residential and institutional care because, as Lini already mentioned, although a study was undertaken in one state in Malaysia, we don't have a comprehensive overview on the situation and the numbers of children in residential and institutional care. And so one of the first priorities is really to get that data, get that evidence, because only when we have a full picture of the situation of children in residential and institutional care can we take appropriate action to reduce those numbers and to make sure that wherever possible that children can be placed in alternative care, kinship care, foster care, or other means, and to avoid having children in institutions because we know the outcome for them is not good.
And also to make it more contemporary to Malaysia as well. At the moment, the Malaysian government has approved and is undergoing a pilot family-based care. And so this resolution adds greater emphasis and confirmation that Malaysia is heading the right way in looking to place children out of institutions and to prevent family separation and to make it as a last resort. And also the other initiative that I was referring to, alternative to detention, it also gives it would give greater confidence to both the government and CSO that Malaysia is taking the right direction in thinking of approving of the ATD or rather a pilot for alternative to detention.
So that was Sarah Nortenstahl, Chief of Child Protection, as well as Lee Lin Ni, Child Protection Specialist, both from UNICEF Malaysia.
I know, I think for many of us, the idea of children in orphanages or care homes, you know, really seems too far removed, right? And, you know, so distant from our own realities. And that's why our best efforts are usually just aimed at giving them short-term aid, like donations. You know, but just like any other social issues that affect children's fundamental rights, these kind of sporadic or one-off efforts don't really solve the problems or meet the child's best interests.
Yeah, so a UN resolution helps to lay out a clear direction for governments to focus on, to focus their efforts on the underlying reasons for decisions when they place children in care in the first place. Yeah. And so these are reasons that are often complex. You have poverty, family breakdown, disability, ethnicity, inflexible child welfare systems, and also the lack of alternatives to residential care.
Yeah.
And so these are not issues that you can just address with Band-Aid solutions, and they require holistic responses that do identify the families at risk, that address their needs and prevent the removal of the children from the families.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we were talking about this, Shamila and Suwen, and we do, I'm sure we've each of us come across residential homes that actually serve a very important need for children who are very vulnerable. But at the same time, this is recognizing that on sort of like on a bigger scale, on a societal scale, we can't be depending on institutional homes as the first resort.
As the first measure, that's right, yeah.
And I mean, this issue, tackling institutional care of children, it does seem very overwhelming for us, and it's really hard to figure out what we are supposed to do at the individual level. But at the very least, a starting point, I think, is to recognize that every child has the right to grow up with his or her family and not to be separated from them as much as possible.
Absolutely. You can continue to share your thoughts if you have any on this with us. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. If you'd like to send us a longer message, you can also drop us a message on Facebook. Look us up at BFM The Bigger Picture. If you've missed any part of today's show, you can download the podcasts on bfm.my/dailydigest, on the BFM app, or on Spotify. We will leave you now with God Bless the Child by Billie Holiday on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.